Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Swung on a high fly ball deep to left field. Way back it goes. And you can forget about it. Lou Maloney is homered in his first at bat at Fenway Park. The local kid goes deep and the Red Sox lead it 5-0.
Sorry, Lou, if we had a second 20, I might have voted for it, but didn't make the top 20.
How the hell do you forget that one, Buck? Didn't even make the top 20?
Nope.
You got to be kidding me. I got my bat in hand right now. I'm ready to go.
I can't believe we don't have Fourier's first touchdown in Gillette Stadium. I mean, that's like, where's that one
at? Let me guess. You spike it between your legs?
I did.
I don't remember that one. What happened? What happened with that
first,
one?
First touchdown at Gillette Stadium. That should be a memorable moment.
The one where you fell down in the Super Bowl.
No, not that one, Bill. No, a more memorable one.
All right, talking about Bill, Henry McKenna of USA Today wrote a piece at the other day on Steve Belichick, and including questions raised when the coach, the son of a coach, is perceived to receive maybe unfair advantages in an industry that is commonly criticized for lacking diversity. Mike Florio picked up on it with Pro Football Talk, and I'm reading it right now. Nepotism or stuff on social media, and people looked at this and said, oh my God, he's being given a huge advantage that other people don't get or whatever. I don't know if Steve Belichick is ever going to be head coach, and people are saying, is it possible that not Josh McDaniels, but Steve Belichick, years from now, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever, becomes the next head coach of the New England Patriots? But would either one of you guys be surprised if we get an announcement here sometime in the next few weeks, next couple months, that Steve Belichick is the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots?
No, would I be surprised?
I think he was last year.
I mean, so do I. I think he was. I mean, this whole—I remember the whole Gerard Mayo thing was so just so nutty. The fact that here's this guy that can come in right away and be a defensive coordinator. That's all he was doing was throwing in the sending in the signals. I mean, sure, he was helping out with game plans, but he was really just he was leading those guys down the right path.
Correct.
Belichick, Steve, I think probably had the most to do with addressing the team, but again with the help of the hovering helicopter dad Bill Belichick.
But we know what Bill does, though, right? He lets you do it the first year without having the official title attached to your name,
right?
And the second year you get the title. So my guess is he's getting the title here real soon.
I mean, again, it's a title. I think he was it last year. If he doesn't give him the title this year and he gets the same job, would you be surprised with that too? I wouldn't. Same thing. He's got the headsets. He's calling in the plays. Well, who's your defensive coordinator, Bill? It's just a title. We don't care about titles. Well, it looks like Steve's your defense. No, we don't care about titles. It's a collective, you know. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he doesn't name him.
Titles aren't the most important thing in the world around here to us. Winning is.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
Okay, winning. Yeah. Well, I would say that it seems to be like so nepotism is a bad thing in the NFL. I would say name me I don't think it's actually ever happened. Mike Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan came pretty damn close to being, listen, you got to check my facts on this one, the first father and son to win a Super Bowl on separate teams, right? Because obviously Mike Shanahan won two with Denver, and Kyle Shanahan almost won one with Atlanta as an offensive coordinator. Went to San Francisco. I'm just saying. It's just, it would be, it doesn't necessarily.
John Gruden, Jay Gruden? But Jay Gruden's not going to come close, right?
No.
Gruden's.
And no, I mean, they're brothers, though.
Brothers.
Yeah. But so, still, saying, I mean, just family, right? But father, son, you want to stick with. But I'm just saying,
I would say,
just
like,
family.
If anyone has a, huge shoes to fill, or, as far as expectations, if your dad is Bill Belichick, and you're the seed of that guy, and you grew up with him, and he mentored you. Like, he's the best that ever do it. And you got, you know, one-on-one teaching and probably more information than other coaches would have gotten because you live with them. You know, man, to think that what the expectations were going to be on him.
I would say this, that and I said this a few years ago when we were talking about Bill Belichick, and a lot of people thought he was not long for that job, that he was going to leave. And I don't know where they were coming up with that. And then, you know, and then we suddenly get the ego question, and he wants to be able to prove that he can last beyond Brady because he wants to be able to prove that he can win it without Brady. I think the biggest factor, and I said it then, and I'll double down on it today, the biggest factor of Bill Belichick hanging around and being in this thing for the long haul, because I think it's another 5 years or so, is one, he loves what he does. And second of all, he has not one, but he has two adult sons with him working every single day. And when you kids get older, as I can tell you, and they leave the nest or whatever, you don't get that day-to-day contact with them. He gets to do that every single day. And so those people that think that Steve Belichick is going to take over from Bill in the next year or two are absolutely crazy. But 5 years from now, who knows? Is that possible? I guess so.
Yeah, I always thought it's going to be interesting, right? So what does it look like with Steve now that Brady's gone? And does the cycle of Patriot coaches continue? Like, you know, offensive coordinator to head coach, right? I mean, is it, you know, because they've had a lot of success. The offenses have been good.
Well,
the defensive have been good. But the winning, I don't think, is nearly going to be as good as it was in the past. I still think they're going to be good teams, but I think this dominance where they just recycle or cycle out all these, you know, future head coaches, like one guy leaves, the next guy gets a job, or this guy leaves.
Well, yeah, but Christian, the only reason why that happens is because of Bill. You know, I mean, it doesn't happen in other organizations because after 4 years, 5 years, 3 years, 7 years, the coach gets fired and everyone's gone, right? And then a new coach comes in. So that's usually the norm in this league. But when you got a guy that's been 20 years, you know, the guy that started off as whatever is a defensive coordinator, now a head coach, because it's been there with Bill for 6 years, 7 years, 10 years. So that's all. I think the cycling of coaches is only because of Bill.
Right.
Like, you could sit there and say Steve Belichick could be the head coach while he's a defensive coordinator going to get a job. No, because Steve will get fired in 2 years and they'll both be out of a job. Right? Who knows? But I think that's only because of Bill's been there for so long.
But I don't understand when people talk about the nepotism, and there's no question that you get a better opportunity if your dad's doing it. But how is that any different from any other industry? I know people that work in retail, people that work in restaurants and whatever, and their kids end up working in the family business because they fall in love with it. They learned it at a very young age. How about actors? How many times do we see that musicians and their kids suddenly become, you know, artists? It's unbelievable. It's a normal thing in all of society. So if you want to look at his age, he's 33. Sean McVay was 31, wasn't he? A genius at 31.
Yeah, and I always thought that he would one of these things where he would have to leave. He would have to go with another. Let's say Bill doesn't give him the head coaching. The defensive coordinator. You know, title. I would think that he would have to leave, make his own name. You know, create his own opportunities. You know, like Kyle Shanahan did.
Right.
He might have to.
Yeah, you're right.
Because that, to me, it's, I don't know, maybe it doesn't matter. But to me, it would be like, man, I got to get, in order for me to get the right, because it's always going to be your dad's defense. It's always going to be like, when did it finally become Matt Patricia's defense? Or when did it finally become Romeo Crennel's defense? It was never Flores' defense. It was never actually his. He never had the title. They just they knew he was good, and they knew it, and they gave him a head coaching job.
So both of you guys can answer this question for me, because I've heard a lot of people be very critical of this, and they talk about being, you know, the coach's son or whatever. I remember Ren Auerbach saying this years ago, talking about an NBA draft that was coming up, and he was talking about he loved these players whose dad were like coaches. And a lot of times their dads were coaches in high school. And the reason he did is because the kid not only learned it at practice every day, but he learned a lot of this stuff at home. And he thought that that player had a coach's mind to them. Now, put it in the presence of, you know, Steve Belichick's not a good enough athlete to actually play the game, but all he needs is the mental part of it. And he picked that up when he was a young kid and had it, you know, ingrained in them.
Yeah, they say that about quarterbacks too, like quarterbacks whose dad is their head coach, right, in high school, or, you know, they seem to think that there's some sort of, listen, they're just smarter because they're constantly going over plays and their dad has constantly been teaching them. So cover two, they knew what a cover two was in fifth grade. They knew how to beat a blitz when they were in seventh grade, so.
But there's also no guarantees. You know what I mean? Like you could be you just don't have the talent to do it.
It's like
just
some because sort of robber here.
Steve is Bill's kid, or I mean, you've seen it before. If that was the case, every athlete's kid would be in the big leagues, or every single athlete's kid would be in the NFL or the NBA. And of course, we see it, but we don't see every. I mean, what are the chances? What are the odds of Major League Baseball players, their kids playing in Major League Baseball or in the NBA or the NFL? You might have the brains, you might be around it, but when you know, there's certain things that make people special. So Steve may have the knowledge, but is it that 30 seconds to go in the game, looking across the field, not calling a timeout, the instincts, all of those things? Like, do they have that? That you can't, there's no guarantee in any of that. And that's why you don't see a lot of these guys, kids, kind of making it to the certain levels.
Who was the best? I'm trying to think of it. Is there any well-known, even in a different sport? I mean, I can't even think of one.
Junior. Ken Griffey.
Ken Griffey yeah. Jr. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he was awesome.
Barry.
I mean, the
Bonds.
Matthews.
But I think it's easier.
The Clay Matthews. Yep. That whole group, yep. From
but you're
Cleveland
right,
into their sons. One was a tackler. One was Clay Matthews, obviously.
There were the whole Matthews
the
family.
The whole family.
Right. But you've got to have the athletic ability to do it. So in this case, Steve does not have the athletic ability to play at a high level. He was a lacrosse player at Rutgers, right? But he's not playing
it's
at a high
snapper.
Level. Right. But that's right. But the mental part of it, he apparently has. Steve DiAsi told me this. This was years ago now. I'm going to guess Steve was probably a teenager, 16, 17 years old. Brian was younger than that. And Belichick and the two sons went and watched with Steve, his kid play at Brown. Zach was playing at a game at Brown. And I remember that next day, DiAsi telling me this story. He goes, you would not believe this. I'm sitting here watching the two kids, and they're picking apart the whole game plan of exactly what everything is going to be. And he said, I've never seen anything like it. He said, it was like it was Bill Belichick doing it.
Really?
And Bill was stepping back, and he was letting the kids talk about it and actually asking them questions like, Steve, what do they want? What do they should do here? What should they do here? And he was blown away from it and by it, and DiAsi is not blown away by a lot of extensive football conversation. He was with this.
Yeah, that's interesting because at that age, I just don't think I would think there wouldn't be much interest. You know, I just think most kids are like it's funny. You hope your kid follows in your footsteps, but a lot of times, like man, you watch your dad going through. Never being home, not having a life, getting paid nothing. Like you want to do that job?
Yeah,
this kid's job you want to do? Dude, go get a desk job somewhere. You want to be a coach, man?
His coach is tough, man.
Oh my God! I mean, it's got to be what it is. In my opinion, it's the hardest. All the game planning that goes on, the lack of sleep. You know, at least with basketball, hockey, you baseball especially, your practice is the game. You don't have any time to, sit there and practice anything. You're learning as you're playing, which I think is just it's just so different than football when you're literally practicing for 6 days for one day of work.
I would say this. It would not surprise me at all. First of all, that he's the defensive coordinator. I think that's pretty much a given that they give him the title this year. But down the road, it would not surprise me at all if Steve Belichick ends up as a head coach. And you might be right, Christian. It may be elsewhere.
Well, I don't think it should. He's the defensive coordinator right now in this league.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No question about it. The other day we did this whole list of the haters, the Brady haters. Do you remember that, the Brady haters?
Yeah.
And for some reason, there is one of the people that we had mentioned. I say mentioned because he was not prominent on our list. I think you had him, Christian, but Lou and I did not, so I would not call
him.
I think
he was important enough.
No, I didn't think he was that prominent. But apparently he's butthurt at the fact that it was actually brought up. And he brought it up on one of those national shows, so we're going to get to it coming up next. 617-779-7937. Drew Bledsoe will join us coming up at 4:30.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back to more Ordway, Maloney, and Fourier.
Bring it back.
You even consider listening to anything else?
No.
OMF.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Right back here on OMF at 617-779-7937. We said Brady week. Not that we're going to stop talking about Tom Brady at the end of this week. Don't think that's going to happen, but we're trying to recap some of the moments of the 20 years, and Drew Bledsoe will have some of those for us coming up in just a few minutes. So I'm a little puzzled by all of this. I heard Colin Cowherd, and Nick Wright was on with them yesterday, and they brought up the fact that that Nick Wright made the list of the biggest Brady haters. So let's go back, first of all, and let's look at what we actually said when we did the Brady Hater show about Nick Wright. So I got Nick Wright on my list, but I'm going to kind of push him to the side. And the reason I push him to the side, he's
nobody
more,
cares about Nick Wright.
He's more,
nobody cares about Nick Wright.
He's more recent. He's more recent. And his hang-up is he's a Kansas City Chiefs.
I hate that I come across as anti-Tom Brady.
Yeah, but you do. And he's a Kansas City Chiefs.
Of the Greg
so I kind of push him off aside.
All right, we're back live.
So we gave a bunch of
names. So that was
names,
us yesterday. Was that yesterday?
Right.
Yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and he was one of the names,
Tuesday,
and we threw it aside because not a big deal.
No, so he's he's not in that class, and nobody even knows where to find him.
Really,
the only time you ever hear from him is basically when we play his sound.
Really, so then I listened to Colin Cowherd's show, and Nick Wright, who's an old friend of Cowherd, is a guest on his show, and Cowherd brings it up and kind of congratulates him. I don't know why.
Congratulations for Nick Wright, a Boston radio station, WEEI, which is in a perennial bad mood. There are no laughs.
Always. Always. These guys are so mad at everyone all the time. Go ahead.
The day after the World Series, they complained the parade's too long. They have named Nick Wright as one of the top three Tom Brady haters. Congratulations in order. How does that land for you? You must be very happy.
Well, it's one of the, you know, pinnacle accomplishments of my career. It doesn't quite trump being named by The Spun America's Most Annoying Sportscaster in 2019, something where I had to beat you in the Final Four. Nothing will ever trump this, but this is a close second.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
We like to,
anything
we
you,
like
Nick.
To th- you know.
Your name. That's right. They had to get it. They had him on. I mean, like I said, the guy's name finally got mentioned on a news broadcast or a sports show, so they had to bring it up. I don't
and
blame
he's
him.
Not even like a. I mean, I had him as number three. I mean, I didn't know you guys even had him ranked.
Nope.
I don't think, Lou, you didn't even have him ranked, did
nope.
you?
I did not have him ranked either. I pushed him off the list because I didn't think he was significant enough, and it's only been the last couple of years. So we were talking about 20 years of Brady, and he basically came aboard as a Chiefs fan, and the Chiefs have been their competition here in the last few years. I thought it was really strange that he took made a big, huge deal about it. He had more.
You know who else was on that list? Bill Belichick. And this is my infinity shield against all the people who say I'm a Tom Brady hater. I'm not a Tom Brady hater. I think of him the exact same way the greatest coach of all time thinks of him. Once upon a time, you were awesome. Right now, though, I think I'll roll the dice with something known as a sit-em and see how it works out for me. That was Belichick's call. I was saying the same thing last year. So, yeah, people can call it a hater, but you know what I call myself, Colin. I'm not a hater. I'm not a hot taker. I'm a truth teller. But sometimes those truths hurt people, especially people at EEI in Boston who are just mad at everyone.
Yeah, we'll probably get ripped for just saying that.
Oh, no question. This is there's no sports going on, Colin. This is the lead of all their shows the next 2 days. And you're going to catch most of the shrapnel because you're so much more famous than me. Like, this is going to become Cowherd Rip Boston on Nesson.com by 5 p.m. I guarantee you.
Buddy, I love you.
Oh, Jesus.
I love you, buddy.
He's taking credit for saying that about Belichick, and yet one of the three co-host of this program actually brought it up himself.
I'm trying to curious. I can't remember us being mad that the parade was lasting too long. I can't remember that being a case.
I'm not a hater. I'm not a hot taker.
I'm a truth teller.
What mad about
stuff. What do you do for a living?
I tell the truth.
I'm a truth teller.
You know what his issue is?
I want to know what happened with Chris Carter. Mm. Tell me the truth now. What really happened with Chris Carter? What did you do to Chris Carter? That's what I want to know.
He suddenly
Why
disappeared.
Was he fired?
Hey,
he's like that. It's like that doctor in China. He just disappeared.
Speaking of haters, before we get with Drew Bledsoe, speaking of haters, Chris, you brought this to my attention. I wanted to bring this up because the Globe sent out a tweet, said the Kraft family used a Patriots team plane to shuttle 1.7 million N95 masks from China to Boston.
Good thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there was a tweet from Jemele Hill. And her tweet, her response to this article was, this is where I remind people that Robert Kraft is friends with Donald Trump and gave to his campaign. It's incredible the Kraft family is doing this, but hope they understand their money helped empower their friend. Like, you miserable bastard. Like, you can't just sit there and say, you know what, this is a great thing from the Krafts. Thank you very much. 1.7 million masks. That's going to help so many people. Instead, her tweet, her response to this, this is where I remind people that Robert Kraft is friends with Donald Trump.
You said his name was Brendan?
Wrong with people? What is wrong with her?
I don't know.
I mean, and people responding to it, like, yeah, you're right. Who cares?
So what does she want people to do? What does she want? So she reminds people that, okay, Robert Kraft is friends with Donald Trump. What is she trying to, you know, listen, get pissed off, yell at Robert Kraft, never let him forget the fact that you helped this guy get into office, so that way, no matter what you do, we're not going to care. Like, you helped Donald Trump become president. So nothing you do matters anymore, Robert Kraft, because you helped Donald Trump. And I just want to remind everybody that you're just trying to make up for the fact that you helped this dude become president. So, you know, no, I'm not getting fooled by that. I saw that.
I'm not going to applaud you. I'm not going to say good job because you're friends with that guy.
Robert Kraft, a pal of President Trump's.
Jesus.
That was such a cheap shot.
There is no time, and everybody says that, and both sides have got to get together or whatever, but that's not what you're seeing out there. You're seeing one side or the other side just, attacking the other side. That's what's happening in all of this.
Yeah, I don't even get, and I'm looking at all the tweets that are going at Lou right now, and so many people just, they're saying Lou misses the point. My point is, no, I don't think any of us are missing the point. Like, it's like the leaps that people take. And with some of these political, opinions is remarkable.
Yeah.
It's just it's this leap. It's out of left field. It's complete hard turn right that has nothing to do with what was said, period. It's kind of like arguing with Ordway sometimes. You never realize when you argue with Ordway and you ask him a question and he brings up something that has nothing to do with the question that you're asking him. It's called the up and under. It's called the Ordway up and under.
I bring viable people to the table on all of my conversations, all of my debates and arguments. But what did you expect? You're going to get people that are going to praise Lou and say, "You're right, Lou. You're right, Lou. You're right, Lou." And then the other side,
ripped her. I'm like, I would rather. Right. Thanks for reminding me. But I would rather just focus on the fact that he bought 1.7 million masks to help those in need. And I told her to just keep being her.
We said.
But then that turns
birth.
Into. But Lou, you don't understand. Millennium. We got 2,500 new cases, 25,000 new cases. And it's all because of Trump. Yeah, I know. Coronavirus is all because of him. I get it. You know, he's trying to make it better now. You know, you might sit there and say that, you know, he didn't do enough early on. People probably agree with you. Hell, I probably agree with you, too. But who did? I can show you a link I just sent out from the people. Was it De Blasio? Out in New York?
Bill de Blasio.
You know, and the mayor out there, everything, talking about how this is nothing. If it was really that contagious, numbers would spike already, and they haven't. Everybody go out in the streets. Both sides of parties downplayed this thing early on. I know he's got more responsibility as a president, but please, save it. You're too worried about a freaking impeachment to worry about what was going on. Go ahead. I'm pissed.
No, I totally agree, but people keep on saying we need to be united in this effort. And
there's
then
no
we
united.
Can deal.
There's no
and when,
united.
And when, right.
And nothing,
then when
there's
we're,
no such thing as when, united.
When this thing is over, then we can worry about it in November with an election, okay? But nobody's going to do that. We're not hearing that. And that's all, Jamel. Did she really have to go there? Yeah, she had to go there because it's all about politics.
I did something good.
Just
say thank you and be on your way.
Hey, well,
zip it.
Zip it.
Wow, no opening day, for Christ's sakes.
Not going to do that. Coming up next, we do our little Brady Week segment, and it's not little, it's a big segment. And Drew Bledsoe was a guy that was here, and he was going to be the quarterback that led this team to a Super Bowl championship back in 2001. It didn't work out that way because Tom Brady got the opportunity to play. Drew probably understands exactly what Brady has gone through here recently and the reaction maybe he got from Belichick. Fascinating, should be fascinating interview. He comes up next right here on OMF.
Bledsoe throwing, corner of the end zone, touchdown! Celebrations in the Patriots executive box. Celebrations around Drew Bledsoe on the field.
You know, sometimes you just got you can't interrupt it, Glenn.
Let it breathe.
Every day, 4:30, you just want to talk all over it. Just enjoy it. It's like Jimi Hendrix for you. Wait, wait for it. Here it comes.
Now we're talking.
There you go.
Think I hit it. Think I nailed it.
No, he didn't nail any. You can't nail anything.
You haven't nailed anything for years.
Brady Week on WEEI to benefit the Greg Hill Foundation Restaurant Strong Fund is brought to you by Samuel Adams, celebrating Brady's 20 years in New England to support those in the service industry who have been financially burdened by COVID-19. Visit restaurantstrong.org. Quarterback before Tom Brady here in New England was a gentleman by the name of Drew Bledsoe. Had Bledsoe not been here, I hate to tell you, the franchise wouldn't have been here, because as big as Brady was over the last 20 years, it was Bledsoe that revived this franchise along with Bill Parcells and others, and the reason that we're all here in New England with a football team. And he joins us live right now on the Harbor One Hotline. Hey, Drew.
What's happening, guys?
How are you?
Drew? You guys surviving out there? I hope everybody's drinking lots of wine right now.
Oh, believe it.
Oh, yeah. Every day around 5:50.
I got the Double Back Winery Walla Walla Valley Cab 2016. Any good? What do you think?
Dude, I think it's one of the best wines in the world, you know. And, you know, I get to say that because I don't actually make it. I've got a rock star that does it. So it's kind of like when you're a quarterback and you get to stand up and take credit after a big win when all the other guys did all the real work.
Yeah, but hey, do you kind of walk around the vineyard and act like you know what you're looking at, touch the grapes and kind of squeeze them? This one's ready.
I do. I don't know if you guys caught that E60 that Jeremy Schapp did, but.
We did.
We walked around in the vineyard, and they did a good job of making me actually look like I know what the heck I'm doing. But mostly, I just have a rock star team that makes great juice for us, and I get to have a lot of fun representing and selling.
Take credit. Pretty good wine. Take credit. So I got to ask you this, because doing a show with you at the time when all of this was happening, and we were on every Monday doing what they do now with Brady, and now that you look back at what happened over the last year or two, there was certainly a disconnect here between Brady and Belichick where the two needed to get away from each other. You were watching it happen with your own career. You went down with an injury. Next thing you know, Brady's in there. You got an opportunity to get back in there. But there was a separation going on. Do you understand any of what Brady might be thinking right now?
Well, you know, I haven't talked to him, so I'm not going to put words in his mouth. But I'll tell you from my experience, a couple of things. You know, when you've been a part of one organization for a long time, first of all, it's a great honor. It was a great honor for me to be there for 9 years, and I know Tommy is honored to have been there for 20 years. But you know, one thing that happened when I moved to Buffalo, it's sort of like starting over as a rookie. You know, and you know, as great as the run was for Tom and for the Patriots while he was there. You know, there is at some point, at least for me, there's a desire to try something new and see if you can be successful someplace else. And I'm sure there's at least a component of that for Tom. You know, I don't get the sense that there's a lot of ill will on his part toward the Patriots or toward Bill. I do think, though, over the last couple of years, what we saw, and I know you guys witnessed this and have probably talked about it quite a bit. You know, Tom, you know, for a long time, you know, played on an undermarket contract. So that they could put good pieces around him. And you know, over the last year, I'm not sure he felt like, you know, that was really happening. Now, I know there were extenuating circumstances with Antonio Brown and some of that stuff, but where they tried to bring some guys in, but just didn't work out. And I think he felt like, you know, if he's going to take an undermarket contract, they got to put some really good pieces around him.
You know, Drew, it's funny you bring that up because last year while we were watching it, there was obviously a love for Tom Brady, and we saw things happening. You tell me, if you have a couple injuries on the offensive line, maybe the trust isn't there in the blind side or the offensive line or the trust in young weapons that you haven't worked a lot with to be in the right spots. Is that why we see a lot of throwaways, inaccuracies, frustrations? How much blame do you put on that and Tom Brady getting a little bit older, maybe not the same guy?
Well, you know, when you're playing quarterback, you know, that word trust that you just said is probably the most important one. You know, especially, you know, if you're a pocket passer like I was and like Tom is, you know, you're really trusting your protection. You're trusting that guys are going to be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. You know, there's two components to accuracy. That's where you throw the ball, but it's also knowing where the guy's going to be. You know, and I talked about this a little bit with Aaron Rodgers when they were on him for some of his accuracy stuff. Well, you know, if you're throwing to a particular spot and trusting that a guy's going to be there, if he's not there, all of a sudden it looks like an inaccurate throw when you were just throwing to the spot where you expected him to be. So there is some component to that. And that's, you know, one thing for Tom, though, that I think the situation we're in right now, you know, breaking in some new guys in a new place and a new offense, even though he's, you know, got 20 years under his belt, you know, this is an important time when you're moving to a new spot. So it'll be interesting to see what they do coming out of this.
So we're talking to Drew Bledsoe. And Drew, so I think the interesting part, as you mentioned it at first, is like just, you know, it's like you're a rookie again. You go to a new team. Everything's new. Everything is happening for the first time. But it can, you know, talk about what your experience was like when you went to Buffalo or when you went to Dallas, trying to, I guess, just incorporate yourself into that personality of the team, or just try to integrate yourself with all the new personalities, because you're similar to Thomas Farr. Everybody likes you. You get along with everybody, you know, and I think that's important for a quarterback. But how difficult was it for you when you went into that locker room in Buffalo in the first time? You went into that locker room in Dallas for the first time.
Well, it's all new people. It's all new faces. You know, I mean, there's, you know, Tom certainly seen, you know, all new faces at some point over his career, but that happens more gradually. Now you're going into a place where everybody's new. And so you're doing two things simultaneously. You're trying to integrate yourself into existing culture, but then you're also trying to grow that culture at the same time. And in order to do that, you know, you need to be around the guys. You need to be face to face with them. And, you know, I've said over the years, you know, Tom's, you know, greatness on the field pales in comparison to the greatness, you know, from, you know, Monday through Saturday that he showed for that franchise, and the leadership that he had and being the hardest working guy and, you know, all of those things that everybody knows so well. And for him to, you know, have the opportunity to bring that to a new franchise is really important, and I'm sure it's inspiring to him, but not being able to do that right now, I think, is probably bugging him.
Drew, we had Charlie Weiss on the other day, and we asked him, does he remember the specific time in which he figured out this Tom Brady kid, he's pretty good, he's pretty special? And he said it took a while. It did not happen instantly. And we remember he was the fourth-string quarterback, you were the starting quarterback, and Charlie said it took a while. When did you, or did you, ever realize that he was pretty good?
Well, you know, I think I've said, and people have talked about it over the time, and some people have taken this and used it as something derogatory toward Tom, which it never was. But when he was first in, I was like, man, this guy's going to be around for a long time. You know, he's such a good locker room guy. He's so hardworking. He's really smart. He was very curious. You know, but I just thought he was going to be around for a long time, just kind of as a backup. And then, you know, the real credit to Tom and what he ultimately did. It was through a lot of hard work, a lot of study, a lot of training, you know, a lot of those things that he really turned himself into such a great player. But it was not, he was not one of those guys that was just, you know, touched with a lightning bolt with talent. He really had to work at it you know, and that goes to the leadership that he showed for the franchise. There was no excuse for anybody, to not work at 100% because the guy that was the leader was doing that.
Hey, so who's more difficult to, you know, to play for, Bill Belichick or Bill Parcells?
You know,
because you had them both, right? You had 2 years for both guys.
I was dumb enough. I want to play for Parcells again. But Parcells was as a quarterback, especially as a young quarterback, he was a real pain in the ass to play for. Now there was an element of it that there was a method to his madness, because I looked forward to Sundays because I didn't have to have him right over my shoulder while I was playing football. I got to be at least 30 yards away from him while I was playing, which was great. So Parcells was a pain in the butt. Belichick, you guys know him. You're around him. You get to see him all the time. It's not a barrel of laughs. But you do know that you're always getting great information, and you always know that he's focused on exactly one thing, and that's winning football games. And so from that standpoint, it was pretty matter of fact. It made it pretty easy to play for him, honestly.
So if you have one guy to take out to dinner and, share a bottle of wine with, which guy is it?
Of those two?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. Although I will tell you that after I retired and started into the wine gig, I went and did a wine deal down at one of the places down by the stadium. And Belichick came over. He had a couple glasses of wine, and he was really engaging. It was the first time I got to actually interact with him outside of a football setting. And you guys know this, man. It's a totally different deal. He smiled. He was laughing, and we actually had a pretty nice conversation and reminisced a little bit. So he was you get him out of that football setting, and it can be pretty fun. So I might have to go take Belichick out. See if I can get him to loosen up just a little bit.
Yes, speaking of that, I forget what documentary it was, but I got a good laugh. I think in one of them, your mother kind of was very upset with Bill over the whole thing. I was laughing at that quote. I know they had her in an interview. And I'm just curious, because you were there just for a few years. You weren't part of kind of what happened, after, that 2001 season. How long did it take? Is that the first time you really sat down? How long did it take for you to kind of maybe talk to him or not be pissed at him? Or what was that like for you?
Oh, certainly after I was done playing, and I came back, like I said, for wine deal. And then when I came out for my Patriots Hall of Fame induction, I got to talk with him a little bit. Honestly, it was funny. We had a good laugh about mom when they interviewed her. I didn't know that quote was going to be in there. I was like, Mom, you can't be on TV talking about how you wanted to murder somebody with a car. You guys know this. It's a different. They're moms, right?
Yep.
They're moms, and that that mama lion comes out if you get after the Cubs. I think I was able to put all of it behind me faster than the rest of the family was, which, anybody that has family or has kids or brothers or, they understand that. But when I came back for that Hall of Fame induction and got that ovation I got at halftime and then showed all that appreciation, I think that was good closure for our family to be embraced like that. It was important, for my folks, for my brother, for all my friends that have been, through that whole thing. And it was pretty fun for my kids, too. I think that was when it really gave it some closure.
Excuse me, we're talking to Drew Bledsoe, all part of this Brady Week that we're doing this week and trying to help out some of the restaurant service employees, many of them who serve wine and double back wine, obviously. I'm intrigued by the when you were talking about going to Buffalo and how that was like a rookie experience. So let's look at this offseason and look at Tom Brady in Tampa and maybe Jarrett Stidham, who really didn't get game reps last year, played a little bit in the preseason, maybe the starter for the New England Patriots. And yet this offseason is going to be maybe totally different. No OTAs. We don't know for what offseason camps. Who knows if we have camps in July. How difficult will it be, or will it, for either one of those guys?
Well, I think probably more difficult. If I had to say it's going to be more difficult for one of the others, it's going to be more difficult for Stidham. Just because, when you're the backup, outside of training camp, you just don't get the reps. And that's really what it's about, playing quarterback. It's about repetition so that you know what's going to happen before it happens. Tom has more experience than anybody that's ever played the position of quarterback. And so he's going to be able to do that fairly quickly. I think for Stidham, though, missing those reps, I think, is really important. And then it's going to make it more difficult for him. But I know they think highly of him, and they'll give him a lot of help. But those are certainly very, very important practices that he's having to miss.
Hey, Drew, when you see, some of these, the pocket passer seems to be,
you know, the 100-foot shark. Like, it just doesn't exist anymore. And you see all these guys that are running. If you were coming out in the league, if you were coming out of college, out of Washington State, like, how difficult do you think it would be for you to kind of implement yourself into the systems that they're running now? Or would they have to completely scrap it and do almost like a reverse Lamar Jackson? You know, go back to, you know, creating an offense just tailor-made for you.
Well, I would have had to use my elusiveness more.
That's true. You know, you are very elusive, game. Very nimble,
you know, very nimble, twitchy. You know, a lot of RPO.
You'd be a tight end, Drew.
No, man, tight ends have to hit people. I'm not dumb like Poirier. I don't want to go run into people. But
he didn't hit anyone.
Yeah, right. But you know, it is interesting because, you know, really for decades now they've been calling for the death of the pocket passer, and it really never came to pass. But now, you know, now you're seeing, and I think part of what you're seeing is integration of some of the college concepts with some of these guys. Where before, you know, you look at what Michael Vick did as an example. You know, he did all of his running just improvisationally. They did not design that many runs for him. And we're now they're integrating some of these college RPO concepts, and actually designing things for quarterbacks to run. And the, you know, the big change to me that's allowing them to do that, are the way that they're enforcing the rules now where you can't hit them as hard. You know, that was the big problem, you know, back in the good old days. You know, if you were going to be a quarterback that was going to run a lot, you had to accept the fact you were going to get hit a lot. And it was going to affect your ability to stay healthy. And that's part of what's allowing that to happen. That just, you know, and you know, obviously you look like at a guy like Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's a pretty unique athlete playing the quarterback position. You know, and, you know, we didn't see a lot of those guys other than maybe Michael Vick that had that kind of explosiveness and still played the position of quarterback.
Have we gone totally to the opposite end when we look at a Lamar Jackson? Will Lamar Jackson not have to eventually figure out that he's going to have to work in the pocket? You look at defenses now and you're seeing safeties basically playing linebackers, Drew. They're much quicker, faster. Is he going to have to develop a little bit more pocket presence?
Well, you know, if you listen to Steve Young, right, you know, obviously one of the all-time great quarterbacks, you know, he said that he really didn't ascend to the top level where he was, you know, at least I think a couple time MVP and Super Bowl champion until he learned to work from the pocket as well. You know, I think if you become one dimensional and you're just a running guy, defenses are going to figure that out. And the athletes on defense in the NFL are such amazing athletes that that they're going to find a way to shut that down. But if you are truly a dual threat where you can function from the pocket, you can distribute the football and then add that elusive quality, now you become a real, real problem for defenses. But yeah, you know, if you're going to have to be able to function from the pocket and distribute, the ball to the other athletes, and force a defense to cover the whole field and not just focus on you. And if you can do that, man, you present a real, real problem.
So you could have been a coach instead. You're ordering people around on harvest day, you know, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, there. I would like to know if you've seen an uptick in the sales of your wine.
Have to.
Based on the fact that everybody, right?
We're all drinking.
We would like you to send some to us so we can indulge as well. Or let us know where to get it.
I would be more than happy to send you guys some wine. All you have to do, you go to this website, doubleback.com, you enter your Visa number.
Yes.
And you know, and then that wine will magically show up. It's amazing.
Can we buy it here at out in Mass?
You can now.
Yeah, you can.
Good.
Where? Yeah, you can. Yeah, you remember
because he pushed for it.
I got to be a lobbyist, man. I was in politics there for a little bit. That was my only foray into politics, hopefully ever. Yeah, no, we've had to change the way we do things. We can't do events and can't do dinners and all of that. But we're reaching out to people and making sure people are taken care of. And we're doing some charitable stuff with the wine. We're supporting, you know, like you guys are doing with this. We're supporting restaurant workers that are out of work and trying to make sure people are getting fed and taken care of. And you know, on a kind of a macro level, going through something like this, it's obviously awful, but there also are some silver linings in that. And one of the things that we're seeing across the board is the goodness in people and people's willingness to help other people out and people's willingness to to serve and to give when they can for people that have been adversely affected by this. And there's a lot of it that's pretty inspiring. So, you know, hats off to you guys for what you're doing, and to everybody that's out there. You know, I would say two things. One, continue to help out where you can. And then the other thing that I've found is really important, that, you know, even just in my close friend group, is to make sure you're getting on the phone and talking with people and maintaining at least some sort of connection. You know, we're human beings. We need that connection. A lot of people are struggling, not just, you know, financially, but just emotionally, you know. And we found that it's really, really important. You know, we jump on FaceTime or Zoom and get face-to-face with people and just check in. So we're maintaining that human connection as we go through this thing.
Good advice, Drew. And thanks again for checking in. It's great talking to you once again. Doubleback.com. You can buy the wine right there. He also has got a podcast, Bledsoe's Basement Tapes. That's what we're all doing. We're all working out of our basement right now.
Yeah, right. We didn't know when we came up with that name, which is just sort of a stupid, we didn't know that we were actually going to be stuck in the basement for months on end when we did that. But yeah, check out the podcast. It's not your normal kind of sports deal. It's me and my brother and one of our buddies who's really, really funny, way funnier than we are. And then we've got, just a couple of local buddies that jump on there and kind of have some good laughs. We talk a little bit of sports, but it's more just us telling stories and having a good time.
Terrific. Drew Bledsoe right here on the Harbor One Hotline. Great talking to you, Drew.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys, and hope to see you guys in the coming months when we can get out and travel again.
You got it. Sounds great. Drew Bledsoe, right here on OMF.